Today on Voice of the Public, Coronavirus Update. We have four major areas on which to focus. Our world, how major economies around the world reacted to the pandemic and what the economic result was, and how that affects all of us. Second, our nation. The United States economy is officially in a recession. What should we expect? Third, our state. New Mexico lawmakers will be in special session next week to address the budget amid the fallout from the pandemic and the shutdown. Finally, on a more local level, how Las Cruces as a city responded and what will the local economy look like over the next few months or years. Economist Dr. Jim Peach, Professor Emeritus from NMSU, will join us over the next hour, and your questions are welcome at 575-646-2212. We'll get started right after NPR News. This is KC Counts. Thanks for joining us on KRWG Public Media. It is 1:06. Good afternoon. This is KC Counts. Voice of the Public, Coronavirus Update. This week, we focus on the economy. In four different major areas, the world economy, our own national economy, the New Mexico state economy, and locally, how the city of Las Cruces and other municipalities have responded to the pandemic and the economic fallout. I'll introduce you now to our special guest today, economist and professor emeritus from NMSU, Dr. Jim Peach. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Probably not the first time you've been here on Voice of the Public.
Actually, on Voice of the Public, this is the first time.
All right.
KRWG a number of times, but not this show.
Well, how about that? I'm surprised to hear that, especially with your number of years that you have been at it and how in-depth you really get involved in the state economy. And we'll get to that just a little bit later on. But let's start by talking about the bigger picture and the world economy and some of the big superpowers around the world, how they responded, how their economic situation has turned out. Who do you think are the nations to watch?
In economic terms, the superpowers, of course, are the United States, China, and collectively, the European Union. And you might add to that, in a marginal sense, Japan is also very large. England, while not as large, is also very important. The UK.
Would that have anything to do with the ongoing Brexit situation and what the question marks are associated with that?
Yes. The UK has been hit with just this triple whammy of Brexit and the virus and an economic collapse. They just released April gross domestic product numbers, and it was the UK economy was down a little over 20%. We don't release that on a monthly basis. We do it quarterly.
Even Boris Johnson came down with this illness and ended up being hospitalized as a result. So maybe even another hit to England in general. Do you know where things stand right now with Brexit, and what is your forecast?
Oh, Brexit has happened, essentially. It's done. And the trade deals have not been renegotiated. That's going to be a ongoing issue, but right now the immediate crisis, of course, is coronavirus. And Boris Johnson, at first, before he came down with it, delayed any sort of action. He thought they would gain herd immunity fairly quick and everything would be okay. But after he came down with the disease, he changed his tune a little bit. And England imposed kind of the stay-at-home and shutting down of business orders that we did in most of the U.S.
And since it originated in China, of course, we can look to China to see, you know, what their economic fallout was. Obviously, you know, some huge differences in terms of the economies in general. But what stands out to you in terms of the way China handled the virus and what's happening there now?
Well, I wish that they had released information earlier. There's now evidence that it may have started as early as August in Wuhan. But China unlike the United States, China imposed very, very strict curfews and stay-at-home orders and shut down all businesses in Wuhan and throughout the country in many areas. They reacted in a way that we can't react. We live in a democracy. And as a result, they pretty much shut down the virus, or so they claim, and they are almost fully reopened. And their economy only took a mild hit in the first quarter of the year and will probably be positive for the entire year.
Interesting. I want to invite you to call with your questions for Dr. Peach, 646-2212. That's 575-646-2212. We are streaming on Facebook. We are live. You are welcome to join us and follow along on social media. Ask your questions there as well. Anthony Moreno is helping out behind the scenes today and cited a new World Bank report.
Came out yesterday.
Yeah, that says that the global recession is one of the worst in history, and overall the global economy is expected to shrink by 5.2% this year. What does that mean?
That's a huge hit. Although 5% doesn't sound like a lot, that's for the entire year. That's not in one quarter. So probably in like the second quarter of the year, it'll be double or triple that. And what that means is millions and millions of people without jobs, loss of production, a decline in international trade. And it's a very, very sad kind of thing. And we haven't seen anything like this since the 1930s.
World Bank anticipates up to 60 million people were on their way out of poverty and could be now pushed below extreme poverty lines due to the loss of income with the pandemic. So in terms...
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm, that really starts to put it in perspective. I was listening to a report this morning about Huawei in general. And, you know, how this company could affect our economy. The United States sees it as a threat to national security. Yet there are American companies that very much want to do business with Huawei. Do you have thoughts on that?
It's a really complex situation. There can be no doubt that there is something of a security threat from Huawei. And it really has to do with 5G. And do we really want a Chinese firm to have access to all of our communications over 5G networks? But it's really, really tricky because, as you indicated, a lot of U.S. firms supply Huawei.
Almost a little side note there, but we've been hearing about it for so long, and I think complex is the word that comes to mind.
Yes, and this will go on for some time.
You mentioned Japan when you talked about the world's leading economies. They had a little bit of a different approach to this pandemic, did they not?
They did. And they also took a hit this summer because of the postponement of the Olympics for a full year. And they're now talking about a reduced set of Olympics next year even. Yes, their approach was quite different. They did not shut the place down like some other nations have done, certainly not like New Zealand, which seems to have eradicated the virus altogether.
Yeah, a lot of people pointing to New Zealand in terms of their success. Obviously, a unique set of circumstances in New Zealand. What was different for them?
Well, to start with, New Zealand is a very small nation, and it's an island nation. They shut down all international flights and shipping and tourist boats from the rest of the world, and they only had to deal with themselves. They had a really tight lockdown. They had lots of testing, and they had contact tracing. And so now, for the last couple of weeks, they don't have any cases, and they've opened up completely internally. But their economy depends so heavily on international tourism that they're still going to take a huge economic hit.
Now let's move from the world perspective a little bit closer to home. It is 1:15, and Dr. Jim Peach, economist and professor emeritus from NMSU, joins us for Voice of the Public Coronavirus Update. We're focusing on the economy today. If you have questions for Dr. Peach, 575-646-2212 is the number to call. We'd love to have you along this afternoon. Moving from the big world picture to our own nation, and just in the last couple of days, we learned that we are officially in a recession. And I'd like for you to tell us how that decision was reached.
Since 1937, a group called the National Bureau of Economic Research, specifically their Business Cycle Dating Committee, has determined the start and the bottom of a recession. They do it on a monthly basis. A lot of people say it's 2/4 of real GDP in decline, but that's not the case because we don't have monthly GDP. And they've done that since 1937. During the Great Depression, we started to come out of it, and then in 1937 there was another downturn. And FDR asked the National Bureau of Economic Research, who had done a lot of work on business cycles, to provide him with information, and they've been the official designator of when a recession starts and stops since that time. They don't have a formula. They have a committee of economists, of five people, who make the judgment that this month was the peak and this month is the trough or the bottom. They've declared the peak to be February.
And I found that interesting because it would indicate, at least to the layperson like me, that maybe there were some other factors that were going into this. It's not just pandemic related.
Well, February was the peak of employment. That's a pretty good indicator. There's no doubt that the economy, even throughout 2019, was a little bit weaker than it had been. Before I heard their announcement, my only question was whether they would declare the peak to be January or February. Mm. And they picked February. That seems to be reasonable enough. I don't have an argument with that. In the last recession, the Great Recession, they had December 07 as the peak, and they had June 2009 as the trough.
I see. So the beginning of the recession is at the peak of the economy.
Yes, and from after the peak, you're on the downhill slide.
Gotcha. We have a question coming in from Jacob on Facebook asking, could we see something like the Public Works Administration be used again to help revive the economy?
Oh, that would be nice, but I doubt we're going to have it in this political environment. We have an infrastructure crisis that we could address right now, but there's been no inclination in Congress or in the executive branch to do that. We have plenty of needs, and the old expression is shovel-ready projects. We have plenty of that. My apologies.
Sounds like you have
FedEx guy just rang the doorbell.
Tell us who we hear in the background there.
Yeah.
That's your guard dog.
Yes, ferocious. a little chihuahua-like thing.
Oh, perfect. Perfect. All right.
Sorry.
No problem. That's all right. You know, that's something that so many of us are getting used to in our pandemic world is that, you know, you would have been in the studio with me doing this show had we not been under these circumstances. And so we're all doing things from home more, and all of our animals are getting involved along the way. So it's kind of nice. Let's talk a little bit about the jobs numbers. We had 1.5 million new jobless claims filed last week, and that was down 355,000 from previous weeks. But we just heard this glowing jobs report, and then we learned that their numbers were a little bit off somehow. Can you explain?
Sure. There's more than one question there, but yes. If a decade ago, even during the midst of the great financial crisis, you had 1.5 million people filing for initial unemployment claims, that would have been horrible news. The reason the 1.5 million was looked at as good news is that it was down from the previous week and the week before that. And then there's the question about the very rosy employment report from last Friday. Last Friday's report was for May, and specifically their survey week is May the 12th. One of the things that they are probably not counting here is that a lot of people are technically working under the PPP program, under the CARES Act, the Payroll Protection Plan. And those people are receiving their paychecks, but they are essentially unemployed. They certainly weren't counted. And this number may be revised in future months.
Let's talk a little bit about the aid packages, PPP and the CARES Act and the different legislation that Congress has put together. And there's still maybe more to come. How effective do you think the packages that they've put together are, and what issues do you see with them?
Okay. Overall, the CARES Act, which was the big one, which included PPP, has been a huge stimulus for the economy, and so have been the actions of the Federal Reserve Board, which has kept financial markets going. So if you take the $2.5 trillion or so in the CARES Act and add to that another $3 trillion from the Federal Reserve, we've pumped about $5.5 trillion into the economy. And so it's no surprise that stock markets have done well with all that money floating around.
That was my next question.
But separate the stock market from the economy in a way. That does not reflect the thousands and thousands of businesses that have gone bankrupt, the millions of workers who are out of work. It's disconnected from the real economy, if you like that phrase.
Makes sense. We've got a caller on the line holding. I'd like to get to Eddie. Good afternoon. Welcome to Voice of the Public on KRWG. Do you have a question for Dr. Peach?
Actually, that's what I wanted to piggyback on, is the national stimulus that has been put in. At what point do you continue doing the stimulus that pumps up the stock market but doesn't have much of an effect on Main Street, on everyday people? You've got a $1,200 stimulus check, but you know, you've got large corporations that are taking advantage of millions of dollars and not pumping it back into the economy themselves.
Yeah, I would have designed it differently. But I'm certainly glad that they did something. We would have been in much, much worse shape had it not been for the CARES Act.
Thank you very much for your question, Eddie. What I would like to expand on a little bit there is how it seems the rich keep getting richer and keep taking advantage of these situations.
Yes. The rich, as you describe them, always have an advantage over the poor. And in this downturn, it is certainly the poor who get laid off from their jobs first and will be called back last. The poor always take a disproportionate hit as compared to the rich. The poor cannot take advantage of runs in the stock market. They cannot take advantage of tax provisions. That's the way our system is designed.
Leslie has a question on Facebook. With so many remote workers now, do you think companies will realize the amount of money they can save not having to rent office space and office equipment? And if that is the new workplace normal, how will that impact real estate and investments in office buildings?
You bet. Good question. And many companies, by the way, are finding out that people are more productive at home, not less productive. I've watched that issue fairly carefully. There's no doubt that there will be some change in the demand for commercial real estate, unless you take into account social distancing. If that lasts for a long time, some firms are going to need more office space to keep people separated, not less. When I listen to the commercial real estate experts on financial networks, they are mixed on that issue. Some of them think that this will be permanent and that there will be a decline in the demand for commercial real estate. There's another aspect of this, and that's whether many of the shopping malls will survive as retail outlets. And so the implications for that are huge.
We were certainly seeing the trend for years leading up to this. And something like this pandemic could have just pulled the rug out from under that sector.
And, you know, retail trade in particular had been losing employment long before the virus hit, and then the virus just has been a devastating event for retail trade.
So when we talk about these kinds of issues, what does that lead you to believe for the future of our unemployment numbers, or the near-term future of our unemployment numbers?
Well, Chairman Powell of the Federal Reserve just yesterday or the day before said he thought it we would have zero interest rates through 2022 and that we might not be recovered to where we were, meaning a 3.5% unemployment rate, for a decade. And that's also pretty much what the Congressional Budget Office said and what most of the private sector banks are saying in their economic forecasts. In the Great Recession in 2008 and 2009, New Mexico lost a lot of jobs, and it was a full decade before we gained the number of jobs back to where we had a level that was the same as we had in December 2007 when it started. We had just come back from the Great Recession.
I've heard some business owners say maybe they weren't, you know, even 100% back from that event.
That is correct.
When this began. Will we ever be able to go to a buffet again?
I don't know. I'm not ready to go inside a restaurant. I'm not ready to get on an airplane. Mm-hmm. I'm not ready to go stay in a hotel. Mm-hmm. So that's anecdotal evidence, but I think there are a lot of people like that. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a long time before we are back to so-called normal.
Dr. Jim Peach, economist and professor emeritus from NMSU, our guest today on Voice of the Public, Coronavirus Update. Our focus, the economy, how it has impacted the world economy, the United States economy, and we're just about ready to move to dive into. You mentioned our state Great Recession fallout, and that's where we'll be moving to next. And in fact, on election night, I reached out and was able to speak with State Senator John Arthur Smith, who did not win that night. in the primary, so he will not be returning to the state Senate. He is currently the Legislative Finance Committee chair, a very powerful position. I started my conversation with him by asking him what the biggest challenge would be for lawmakers moving forward.
Trying to navigate through the downturn of the revenues to the state of New Mexico and to try and broaden the revenue base for the state of New Mexico. I chair the Senate Finance Committee, mm-hmm. and I've spoken many, many times that we're far too reliant on oil and gas. And when that collapses, the revenues to the state collapse. It represents either directly or indirectly almost 45 cents out of every dollar we appropriate.
You know, we've been hearing that for sure for a long time. What do you think have been some of the barriers to making progress along those lines?
Reluctance of legislative members willing to change when revenues are healthy on that, and when they're anemic. Typically, it's during a downturn in the economy at that time, and making changes to broaden the base. Very, very difficult during a recession atmosphere.
What do you expect to come out of the special session coming up later this month?
Now, the three things that I hope to happen out of this month, number one, state's got to be able to pay its bills. We've got to make certain that our health care system is adequately funded to take care of the virus issues. And then we need to put people back to work. So I'm hoping that that the special session will be able to address those.
What would you point to as some of the opportunities for broadening our economic horizons?
The first opportunity, we're talking about state issues on that. I have an equal concern with local government revenues, especially those related to the virus with the shutdown of retail and restaurants and that sort of thing. The rhetoric is going to be out there that we need some help. You get outside of the metropolitan statistical areas, you've had an erosion of retail on that from that standpoint. In addition to that, there's been a lot of exemptions given to try and stimulate economic development and a lot of tax concessions, i.e., for example, the film credit. There's a large element out there saying it's a wonderful industry for us. But the studies that have come out, for every dollar we concede to the film industry, we get 46 cents back. So I think those types of initiatives will certainly be scrutinized and looked at much closer.
And where do you see the opportunities for broadening economic growth in New Mexico so that we're not so reliant on the oil industry?
You're going to have to remove the exemptions, and you're going to have to broaden the base that way. We have a lot of things that are exempt, i.e., for example, Union Pacific's fuels, Burlington Northern's fuels on that. And so you have that type of initiative taking place. And I think some of those exemptions will ultimately be eliminated.
Do you think there are other industries outside of that that we should be, you know, looking to foster? Let's talk about, for example, recreational marijuana. Is that an area where you think that New Mexico is ready to go and prosper from?
Well, there's two issues with recreational marijuana. Quite frankly, it's in violation of the federal law. And those of us that live along the border, I don't want to put our young college students or young people at the mercy of the federal government prosecuting on those issues from that standpoint. When somebody gets stopped at the station between Deming and Las Cruces, for example, I don't think they're going to spend a lifetime in jail by any means, but they're really going to go through an inconvenience and have to get an attorney. And then the advocates for the recreational marijuana are always talking about how much money it generates, when the facts are in Colorado, when you talk to the financial budget people, that it's not generating those kind of dollars, that what dollars it's generating are going to try and offset some of the problems that have been created.
So is there maybe a different industry that you should that we should point to that maybe just burgeoning or where we should focus to grow that economic base?
I don't think we should be swinging for the long ball by bringing a Tesla or something to the state of New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
I think we should concentrate on existing industries that we have, i.e., for example, how do we add additional value to pecans? How do we add additional values to chilies? You have various industries like that that are already located here, the wine industry. How do you expand their capabilities? So rather than looking halfway across the world or halfway across the country, let's look in our own backyard to see how we can improve things.
Senator John Arthur Smith will be headed into special session next week, and then his time as a state senator will come to an end. There's a lot to unpack there. And Dr. Jim Peach, economist and professor emeritus from NMSU, is our special guest today on Voice of the Public. You can chime in on the phone, 575-646-2212, 646-2212. First, let me ask you, Dr. Peach, what are your takeaways from that short conversation?
Oh, I think Senator Smith is absolutely correct in the short run on virtually all of his comments. I would add that if we are serious about economic growth, that the keys to that are relatively simple. We need, in the 21st century, we need a highly educated workforce. So we need to put a lot more money into education. We shouldn't have any high school dropouts, but we do. and we lack infrastructure. In the 21st century, you need the whole state to be wired for broadband and really good access, and we are not. We are the least wired state in the nation, although Mississippi may rival us occasionally on that issue. We have lots of infrastructure projects that we need to do, and even in tourism. Tourism is a major part of the New Mexico economy, and if we're serious about that, we need to put a lot of money into our state parks and our rest areas and museums. It's going to require an investment if we want people to come here.
In the special session next week, which looks like it might be broadening a little bit, just outside of the scope of the budget alone, what is your forecast in terms of what they're going to come away with as for a working package moving forward?
For this special session, we'll take care of a little bit of FY20, which ends on July 1. We're short for FY20, and we'll certainly take care of FY21. I doubt that we're going to do much beyond that. But for FY21, we're facing what the Consensus Revenue Estimating Group says is a $1.9 billion deficit out of a $7.6 billion budget. That's a lot. But we can use some federal money, at least they're counting on that, $725 million or so. We have ample reserves. We created a truly a rainy day fund in 2017, and we'll tap into that. We will tap into other sources of funds. And so I don't expect drastic cuts in the state budget, and that's probably a good thing.
We have another caller on the line who's waiting to ask a question. Jeffrey, welcome to Voice of the Public on KRWG. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Go ahead with your question.
All right, Dr. Peach, would you dare predict inflation or cost of living increases probably during the next 12 or 24 months?
I doubt it. Demand for almost everything is down. We're unlikely to see, at least at the consumer level, much in the way of inflation, except for isolated kinds of products, and that's not inflation. Inflation is a general increase in the price level.
Thank
we're not
you,
likely
that's
to
great.
See it.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Jeffrey. 575-646-2212, 646-2212 I think I just lost my connection with Dr. Peach. So I am going to attempt to dial him back here and see if I can reconnect and get him back on the line. And
or ask your operator for assistance.
Oops. Doesn't look like that's going to work, does it? Because I got to push a couple more buttons here. This is KC Counts. Thanks for joining us for Voice of the Public Coronavirus Update. Today, our guest, Dr. Jim Peach, economist and professor emeritus from NMSU, and excellent. Dr. Peach is calling back on the line. All right, are you there?
Yes, I don't know what happened, but I lost you.
We did get disconnected. Thank you so much for calling back.
You bet.
You saved the day. And we left off with Jeffrey's call about inflation, and Noel had a question who is watching on Facebook today. Noel wants to know, how will the oil sector of New Mexico's economy respond to the recent increase in oil prices? What are oil prices doing? Is it as volatile as the stock market?
Yes, more so, really. Today, West Texas Intermediate was at just below $36. It came down some from last week. If we stay in the $30 to $40 range, that's going to keep a lot of firms from going out of business and declaring bankruptcy. But very few firms can make money drilling for oil at $35 or $40. If it stays in that range, it'll stop the bankruptcies, but it won't be a boom time. When this started in early March, we had 117 active rigs in the state. Last week, we were right at half that number with 58 active rigs. And New Mexico is holding up better than the rest of the Permian. In the Texas portion of the Permian, they've lost three quarters of their active rigs.
Wow!
Now, New Mexico production has probably held up fairly well, but we don't get those numbers except with a 45-day lag because we get them through their tax filings. Production has held up. Prices are a bit better than I expected even a month ago. Our portion of the Permian, the Delaware, Eddy and Lee counties, has held up much better than the Texas portion of the Permian. So where is it going? I've only been studying that for close to half a century, and I don't know. As soon as someone tells you that they know where oil prices are going to go, start laughing. Take a drink, do whatever you want to do, but they don't know. I can tell you all kinds of stories about that.
It has been one of the great mysteries to me, and I haven't studied it, but it just never seems like we get real answers as to what's really going on. You know, there are so many factors around the world.
I'll tell you a quick story. In July 2008, West Texas Intermediate, for one brief week, hit $147 a barrel. And T. Boone Pickens was on TV and said, oh, by December, we're going to have $200 a barrel oil. And Boone Pickens knows a lot, or did know a lot. He's now deceased. Mm-hmm. He knows a lot about the oil industry. But in December of 08, we had $40 oil.
Wow.
So he only missed it by $160 a barrel.
Well, I'd like to get back to the phone now. We have Alan holding. Good afternoon, Alan. Welcome to Voice of the Public on KRWG. How are you?
Very well, thank you. I'd like to ask Dr. Peach about Spaceport America. We've seen a lot of money being put in and a lot of possibilities coming there. What's the latest on that? How will that help New Mexico in the future?
Thanks for your question. It was on my list.
Spaceport America is a really interesting operation. It is the only spaceport that was built as a spaceport. We started putting money into it in 2004 and 2005, and the state essentially built the facilities out there, a little over $200 million worth. And we've been pouring operating money into it for a long time. Finally, we're really getting some action out there with Virgin Galactic and Up Aerospace, and there was another firm that announced they're moving out there just the other day, and I forget their name. I apologize. But for the first time, there's a lot of action out there, and we might finally start seeing some good things out of Spaceport America. One thing that we have not seen yet, in the initial analysis of that proposal, a lot of the economic benefits came from tourism. And we haven't really seen that yet. Somebody needs to build a 5-star luxury hotel. If you're going to send a lot of rich people into space, their families are not going to want to stay in the $26 a night motels.
I went looking around at land out there some time back just for fun because I thought Oprah would need a place to stay when she came. Jim Peach, economist and professor emeritus from NMSU, our guest for Voice of the Public today, 646-2212. That's 575-646-2212. We would love to have you along. We've got less than 15 minutes to go here for our show today. So if you have a question, time to get it in now on the phone, or feel free to join us on Facebook where we're streaming live. We appreciate your participation so far. I did have Spaceport America on the list, and I'd like to thank Anthony Moreno, who is here with us off air, but here to dig up numbers if we need them, and he certainly is helping a lot in terms of supplemental information today on the list of big economic development projects in New Mexico over the course of our history. Where would you say Spaceport America lands in terms of its sheer size and level of investment? Yes, question for you, Doctor.
The dollar investment we've made?
Just in terms of the project itself, where would you put that? Is it the biggest economic development project New Mexico has ever done, or is it close to the top?
It would certainly be in the top 10, but almost all of these are public-private partnerships. Certainly the facilities at Santa Teresa with the railroads is larger in terms of dollars and in terms of employment. If we put a lot of money into the Facebook call center in Los Lunas, that's certainly a very large one. The problem is, over the years, I'm not talking about any particular project, but over the years, we haven't done very well with economic development subsidies from the state.
Looks like we've gotten disconnected once again from Dr. Peach. So I will give him just a moment to connect with us here, and in the meantime you can certainly call and we will be with you. We think it's NMSU's phones actually that are providing the problem, so hopefully Dr. Peach will be able to get back on the line here with us. We're talking to Dr. Peach today. He's at home. Of course, we've got social distancing in mind as we continue our coronavirus updates weekly here on Voice of the Public, and of course today focusing on the economy. We only have a little over 10 minutes to go, so I certainly hope we're able to reconnect. But I know that there is still so much on the list of things to get to in terms of not only our state economy, but also our local economy. And we're going to break it down even more. Yippee. Here we go. Hi, Dr. Peach. Are you with us?
I am. I don't know how we got this connection. We think
something is happening with NMSU's phones today, but I can't tell you necessarily what that is. So my apologies. And
it could be mine.
And let's pick up where you left off. You were just about to tell us one of the very interesting things about Spaceport America.
Well, I had talked about tourism, and you had asked about, somebody had asked about where it ranks in terms of all of the economic development projects we've had. I don't have the data in front of me, but certainly it's up there as one of the big ones.
Right. When it comes to other areas of development, I was just reading recently that is Raytheon evacuating Albuquerque altogether?
Yes.
So this has got to be a pretty big hit to the state. And where else are you seeing any other companies leaving New Mexico? And why do you think that is?
Oh, I don't think it's unique to New Mexico. A lot of companies are consolidating their operations. But I don't think that's unique at all. We've also got companies coming in. When it's safe to do so, the Netflix investment in the film industry in Albuquerque is going to be really good.
Is it, though? We had John Arthur Smith telling us that maybe that investment isn't really giving us back what it should be.
I think at this point we don't need to subsidize them. I was involved more than a decade ago in evaluating the proposed tax credits for the film industry, and my colleague and I found very little return to the state.
Mm-hmm.
And that was consistent with studies that have been done across the nation and other states. It's awfully hard to bribe industries to come here or anywhere, but we've done pretty well in terms of adding a little bit of employment and having some investment in the state as a result of it. It's just not a good return to the state treasury.
We also talked a little bit about the legalization of marijuana for recreational use, and he cited some concerns along similar lines that the economic impact was lessened because of, he said, problems that it created. Can you explain what he might have meant by that?
Well, he was referring to the fact that it's still prohibited at the federal level.
Mm-hmm.
Other states have done this, California, Oregon, Colorado, but almost all of them have found less new net revenue to the state than they expected. It's not going to be a huge thing in terms of state revenue.
We've got a couple of callers here.
I'm not sure we shouldn't do it. A lot of states are doing it.
I see. Just don't expect quite as much as maybe what we thought, right?
Right. but all of these things, you know, we could, there are all kinds of things that we can do on the revenue side. We have not raised the gasoline tax, which is a per-gallon tax, since 1993. And we need to do that.
Them's fighting words, right?
I know. Every time you mention tax in Santa Fe, you almost get run out of town, but I've done it many times in front of various committees. You could tax plastic bottles. And my estimate last summer was that we could pick up $25 or $26 million a year from putting a 10-cent tax on plastic bottles, which would also help the environment. And as Senator Smith mentioned, we've got a tax system that is full of loopholes and exemptions. Our gross receipts tax is often referred to as a Swiss cheese tax because it's got so many holes in it. And there have been various proposals over the years to change that. We could shift our emphasis from oil and gas revenues to other sources of revenues at any time we wanted to. I've been around a long time. I think the first time I testified before one of the Blue Ribbon Tax Committees was in 1982. And the issues were exactly the same. We just haven't done anything with it.
Interesting. Let's go to Cynthia. We have been having, our callers have been having a tough time reaching us as well today. So we apologize for that, Cynthia. Thank you for your persistence and welcome to the show.
Okay, and I'm having a hard time hearing you.
Okay. Cynthia, are you there?
Hello?
This is Susie.
Oh, Susie, sorry. I had Cynthia written down here. So, Susie, welcome to the program. What is your question for Dr. Peach?
Well, I know New Mexico is desperately...
I can't hear you, Casey.
Okay, he's having trouble hearing me. So go ahead and ask your question, and then I'll see if I can't relay it to Dr. Peach.
Yes, I know New Mexico is desperately hunting for a new industry, and I read this book called China RX, how China makes all of our, well, not all of them, but basically all of the initial chemicals used to make our pharmaceuticals. So would like a generic company like that be workable in New Mexico?
Dr. Peach, were you able to hear Susie's question?
No, I was not. Let me call you back real quick. You're just really faint. I can hardly hear you.
Okay. I'm going to try to boost my microphone up a little bit and see if that helps. Did that help at all?
A little bit. Now, what's the question, and I'll try to answer it.
Okay, let me make sure that that you can hear Susie. Go ahead, Susie.
Yes, I know that New Mexico is desperately hunting for new industries, and I know that China basically makes all of our pre-chemicals for our pharmaceuticals. So would a generic company to make the pre-chemicals work here in New Mexico?
It might, but on any investment decision like that, you have to look at the details of it.
How would you weigh through that, first
should,
of all?
But,
yeah.
But whether it's an economically viable business or not, I can't tell you.
Okay. Well, let's move on and see if we still have Joan on the line. Joan, are you with us on KRWG?
I hope so. this program is great. I really appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
As I understand it, our three major money makers in New Mexico are the military, the oil industry, and tourism. So it seems to me that we need to have sustainable industries. In other words, ones that are independent rather than dependent. I love the idea of 10 cents on a plastic bottle. I think the idea of raising hemp to replace plastic would be sustainable for a lot of reasons. The oil industry, as our economists have said, we are so dependent, we rise and fall on them. Now, tourism is in turn dependent on the gas. So I just was wondering your response to hemp to replace plastic and anything else that controls the plastic industry that lives off our oil.
What do you think, Dr. Peach?
Well, there, most of that was a statement. I'm not sure what the question is.
What do you think about hemp's viability in terms of, you know, being a sustainable, independent industry, even to the point of replacing plastics?
Yeah, let me say that the industries in the United States and are certainly interdependent. We will never be independent in terms of production of anything in New Mexico, even things like agriculture and food. Most of the food that New Mexicans consume is produced outside the state. The hemp industry, which was mentioned by the caller, seems to be taking off. But it's not about hemp products except for CBD oil. all of the money there is in CBD oil. So there are a lot of opportunities for the state. We have huge potential here.
Looks like we have just a little over a minute left to talk about how Las Cruces as a city responded independently to this crisis and what the impact will be on a very local level.
Okay. First, I think the city has done really well. For the most part, the city has simply followed state guidelines and occasionally a little bit more, but I think the city has done well. I think the state has done well. In terms of economic impacts, Las Cruces is pretty unique because we have a very high proportion of our labor force engaged in government work, and we haven't lost those people yet. Where we have lost is in restaurants, hotels, retail trade, but we aren't down as badly as the state as a whole or the nation.
That certainly
government employment gives us some stability.
That certainly is good news on many levels. Dr. Jim Peach, thank you so much for joining us today. We are out of time. Sorry for the trouble keeping connected, but thank you for your time. We hope to talk to you again soon.